Krishna Pushtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nirvisesa Sunyavani Paskacharya Sitarani Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutam Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajiva Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Saita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Canto 6, Chapter 9, The Appearance of the Demon Vitrasura, Text 51. And this is the Lord still speaking to the demigods. Magavan Yata Bhadram Vo Dadyancham Rishi Satamam Vidya Vrata Tapaha Saram Gacham Yachita Ma Chiram Magavanyata Badram Vo Dadyancham Rishisattamam Vidya Vrata Tapasaram Gatram Yachatamachiram Magavanyata Badrambo Dadancham Rishisattamam Vidya Vrata Tapasaram Gatram Yachatamachiram Magavan, O Indra, Yata, Go, Badram, Good Fortune, Vaha, to all of you, Dadyancham, to Dadyancha,
Rishi Sattamam, the most exalted saintly person, Vidya, of education, Vrata, vow, Tapaha, and austerities, Saram, the essence, Gatram, his body, Yachita, ask for, Machiram, without delay. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. O Mahavan, Indra, all good fortune unto you. I advise you to approach the exalted saint Dadyancha, or Dadichi. He has become very accomplished in knowledge, vows, and austerities, and his body is very strong. Go ask him for his body without delay. Purport. Everyone in this material world, from Lord Brahma down to the ant, is eager to keep his body comfortable. What is everybody? They are what? Eager to keep the body comfortable. A pure devotee may also be comfortable, but he is not eager for such a benediction. So what's the difference between ordinary conditioned souls and a devotee? The devotee's not eager. So from Lord Brahma to the ant, they're eager for bodily comfort, and the devotee is not eager for it. Since Bhagavan, the King of Heaven, still aspired for a comfortable bodily situation, Lord Vishnu advised him to ask Dadyancha for his body, which was very strong due to his knowledge, vows, and austerity. So asking someone for his body means you're asking them to die. What does that say about how Dadichi feels about his bodily comfort? He must not be very eager for his bodily comfort. Magavan yata badrovo dadyancham ruchisattamam vidyavrata tapasaram gatram yachatamachiram. O Magavan Indra, all good fortune unto you. I advise you to approach the exalted sage, Saint Dadyancha, Dadichi. He has become very accomplished in knowledge, vows, and austerities, and his body is very strong. Go ask him for his body without delay. So the Lord has just been giving a series of verses here about what? Up till before this verse? What was the main philosophical point that Lord Vishnu was making to the demigods? Madri?
Not so good for us, material desires, devotional services.
Yes, don't ask for material desires. By the way, were the desires of the demigods completely materialistic? Why did they want to kill Vritrasura? 100% for their own sense gratification?
They wanted to go on serving the Lord.
They wanted to serve the Lord, and what's their service?
Looking
after the whole universe, actually. And it was very difficult for them to do their service with this Vritrasura. Just like sometimes we're having a meeting of devotees, and one person is causing a disturbance. I just recently had this experience of being in a meeting about 20 devotees, and one of the members kept causing a disturbance. And we kept, different people kept saying to the chairperson, can you please do something? And finally the chairperson asked that one person to leave. So certainly that made it more comfortable for all of us, but it also allowed us to get on with our purpose. So the demigods are certainly interested in taking care of the universe, but that's not their main motivation. Their main motivation here is their eagerness for bodily comfort. So Lord Vishnu has been telling them, don't do this. This is not the right thing to ask me for. And he says, not only are you foolish to ask, but he says, I would also be foolish if I... What? If I gave it to you. And in the early days of the movement, one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada for money to buy petrol. You heard the story maybe in Lilamrita? And when Prabhupada asked him what he wanted it for, he said he wanted to pour it over himself and light himself on fire. So not only should you not ask for something foolish, but if someone asks for something foolish, you don't give it to them. Isn't that correct? So after Lord Vishnu saying that you should neither ask for foolish things nor give foolish things, why is he apparently giving it to them? He's saying, Bhadramba, all good fortune to you, and here you go. Here's your solution. I want you to go to this Dadichi, who's very powerful in three things. What are the things he's powerful in? Knowledge, vows, and austerities. By the way, the word tapaha is a very interesting word. It's used in the Bhagavatam for austerities and also for miseries. Tapa treya means the three miseries. So austerities means voluntary misery, purposely accepting misery. And he says to him, go ask him for his body. Now, we want to think a little bit about why the Lord is, first of all, fulfilling the desires of the demigods and how he's doing it. Because we often hear that when the Lord fulfills the material desires of the devotees, he does it in such a way that they won't ask him again, that they'll become purified. And sometimes it is said that if you ask the Lord, for example, for money, that he'll take away whatever money you already have. But the point is that the Lord, in some way or another, will deal with you so that you don't have to keep asking for the same thing over and over and over again. And we want to see how intelligently the Lord does this. So we're going to look today at, well, what do we do with our material desires? Is there anybody here who has no material desires? Is there anyone here who can say that they just don't care at all whether or not their body is comfortable? Problem. All right. So suppose that we care. Suppose we care whether or not our body is comfortable. Or worse than that, we're eager for it, as Prabhupada said. That the conditioned souls are eager for bodily comfort. We're looking for it, we're working for it, we're meditating on how can I get a nice situation for my body and mind also. So what do we do with that? How do we deal with it? And then we can look at what exactly is this material desire. We'll look particularly at this word gatrama here in the verse. And then finally we'll look at the view of a real devotee like Dadichi. And then we can examine how clever Lord Vishnu is. So, suppose we have material desires. Now, many, many times, devotees take these frequent statements in Shastra, which we just read, many of them, directly from the Lord, don't ask the Lord for material desires. And they take this to mean that you should say something different with your mouth than what's in your heart. In other words, they say that you should be duplicitous with the Lord. That you have all these desires in your heart. You're thinking, I hope I get a wood-burning stove. I hope I can get some warmer socks. I hope that whatever they make for breakfast is something that I like. No. These are the things going on in the heart. But from the mouth comes, oh, Krishna, I just want to serve you. Janme, janme, Prabhu, say, nadana, nadana. And that's what it means not to ask the Lord for material desires. But we have a problem. Ishvara sarvabhutanam hridayesha junatisthati. The Lord's in our heart. I mean, even we can tell most of the time if someone's approaching us duplicitously. Isn't it? If someone's saying something and meaning something else or wanting something else, we usually have a little bit of a clue. Now, what is it you really want? What to speak of Krishna? He hears what we're really asking. There's no question of hiding something from Krishna. Krishna explains that he can understand our desires, just like you can smell the aroma from a flower, just by being in the vicinity. You know, sometimes you walk by a garden, a rose garden, or a flowering tree, and you don't have to go up to the flower and smell the flower. Nobody has to put it in your nose. But just walking by the garden, you can understand the fragrance. Or where I grew up in New York City, and then we moved to North Jersey, but we would drive into the city all the time, and we would drive past the landfill. You know, you go to these cities and they look very nice, but if you want to see what supports the city, it's not very nice. What allows the city to function. So acres and acres and acres and acres of trash in Secaucus, New Jersey. And we always knew, there's a sign for Secaucus, roll up your windows. You know, and even with the windows rolled up and the recirculating on in the car, we practically were gagging from the smell. Right, and you drive past these pig farmers, as they call them. So Krishna can smell the pig farm in our heart. You know, if we say, oh Lord, I'm offering you a lotus flower, he says, no, you're not, you smell like a pig farm. And there's no question of having a relationship with somebody that's based on deceit. It's not a loving relationship anyway. You might have a business relationship based on deceit. You go to a shop, and they say, oh, we have this special deal just for you. We're making an exception for you. No, you're not. You're also trying to make a living. We're not making any money on this deal. It's deceitful. And we all know it's deceitful, but that's not a loving, intimate relationship. That's not the kind of relationship you want to have with your husband or wife or your children or your best friend. So we're asking Krishna for a relationship. When we're chanting Hare Krishna mantra, what we're saying is, my Lord, I want to reestablish my relationship. And Krishna is satyam param. He's absolute truth. There's no question of having a relationship with the absolute truth if I'm being deceitful. It's incompatible. Therefore, Raghunath Das Goswami in Manashiksha says the worst is to be deceitful. And as I've given this example so many times, you can't know which way to go unless you first are honest about where you are. It's impossible. And the example bears repeating. You know, if I want to go to Suniti's house from here at the temple, then I have to turn right on the main road. But if I want to go from my unit, when I get to the main road, I have to turn left. So whether I turn right or turn left depends upon my present position. If I'm actually at the unit, but I think, oh, I don't want to tell her how far away I am, then she'll think it'll take me a long time to get there. I'll lie, and I'll say that I'm closer than I really are. Oh, I'm at the temple. Then she'll give me the wrong directions. Desham sadatavittinam bhajitam vrittipurvakam didami guriyogamkam yenamam payantite. Krishna's going to give us directions, but if we're not honest about where we are, how are we going to get the proper directions? How can the guru, how can the devotees, how can Krishna give us the proper directions if we're cheating? This became very clear to me years ago when one of my students handed in a paper that she didn't write. And what was really funny was that the paper she handed in was a story that we had in one of our books, our textbooks. So I'm reading it and thinking, I've read this before. First I thought, wow, her writing has gotten so good. And I realized at that moment that when a person is deceitful, it's impossible to help them. I couldn't give her instructions how to improve. So therefore, this idea that one thing is in my heart and another thing is in my mouth to the Lord cannot be what is meant by don't ask the Lord for material desires. Don't ask the Lord for material desires means don't have material desires where? In the heart, not in the mouth. Prahlad Maharaj is praying to Lord Nrisingadev, my dear Lord, if you want to give me any benediction, please make it so that within the core of my heart, there is no material desires. He doesn't say, my dear Nrisingadev, please keep the material desires in my heart, but let only requests for pure devotional service come out of my mouth. What we just have these desires in our heart, but we say, no, I don't have these desires. Of course, when we're new to devotional service, generally we think like this. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur talks about this in Anistha Sadhana Bhakti, unsteady devotional service, that one of the symptoms is false confidence. And generally, when you first take up Krishna consciousness, you think, yes, I'm very pure. And that's probably a good thing, because otherwise, if the beginner could see how impure they were, they probably wouldn't stay. Just like for a very young child in the school, you know, a 5 or 6 year old child, and they're just writing, you know, the letters backwards, and they barely make one sentence, and you say, oh, this is wonderful! And they come home and show their parents, look what I wrote! The parents put it on the refrigerator, and the teacher says, almost as good as Shakespeare. So that's how you poem, I don't know. So that's necessary in the beginning. I remember when I first moved into the ashram, we were on our way to book distribution at the airport. I don't remember what I said, but one of the other brahmacharinis said to me, you don't have any love for Krishna. And I thought, well, what am I doing here then? Why am I in ISKCON, you know, if I don't have any love for Krishna? I should just go home. But at a point, at least at a certain point, once you start understanding what's really going on in my heart. Right? And if you don't do that, if one continues going on being deceitful, then what tends to happen? There's two different paths that one tends to take. Yeah? Okay, so you'll start criticizing other people. You become very angry. You become angry and hard-hearted. And we see this happen, unfortunately, with devotees in the Hare Krishna movement. I've seen it happen more times than I'd like to recount. I've seen it happen in myself. That you're just pretending, yes, I'm pure, I'm pure, I'm pure, I'm pure. All I want is to just serve Krishna life after life after life. And you just keep, you know, saying this, whereas the heart is actually churning with all these other things. And you just like, you know, trying to repress it, repress it, repress it, repress it. And then you become very angry and very frustrated. And because this deceit is preventing you from having a relationship with Krishna, therefore the bliss of Krishna consciousness starts diminishing, diminishing, diminishing. And as Jiva Goswami explains, a person in such a condition starts judging their advancement by their external accomplishments. I must be advanced in Krishna consciousness because I built a big temple. Or I must be advanced in Krishna consciousness because I've made so many vows. Or I must be advanced in Krishna consciousness because I've done this or done that. And yes, one starts becoming very cruelly critical of other devotees, especially some devotee who's struggling with control of their senses. So in that case, the tapasya makes your heart harder. And with a hard heart, bhakti yoga is impossible. The externals are possible, for at least for some time. And the other thing that happens is a person one day says, oh, you know, I haven't been honest about what's going on in my heart. I think I'll... I'm just going to express myself. I've been repressing and repressing and repressing. I haven't been honest. I've said I was a great devotee, and now I'm seeing my heart is just churning. I'm meditating on this and that, and I want this and that. And I'm just going to go do it. And this may happen more or less. So a person may be going on with their service, but they start having, okay, you know, let me make a little time for my Maya. I'll do a little Maya over here. And they start having, you know, this part of my life is Krishna, and this part of my life is Maya, and I hope he doesn't see it. Let me try to, you know, keep the Maya portion away from Krishna and away from the devotees. I won't tell anybody about it. Or it can get so bad that it just practically takes over your life. Well, at least I'm being honest. I'm honestly going to the movies. I'm honestly eating garbage. I'm honestly whatever. So these are the two different paths chance one can take if one is deceitful. So what does the Shastra tell us to do with material desires?
Sarvakama, akama, moksakama.
What is one supposed to do with one's desires? Go to Krishna with them. One's supposed to go to Krishna with him. Krishna, these are the things that I want. I'd like to have a wood stove, and I'd like to have, you know, some kora for breakfast today. I wish I had a lot of money. I want these things. But what is the mood? There's a different mood between how the Sakama devotees and the devotees who are aspiring for pure devotional service go to the Lord with their material desires. And this is very important, because those who go to the Lord for the purpose of fulfilling their material desires, that's their purpose. Their purpose isn't yoga. Their purpose isn't rasa. Their purpose is their desires. So if I go to the Lord and say, my dear Lord, see, I'd like a nice house in the country, you know, with plenty of money and a wood-burning stove. What happens when Krishna doesn't give? Because he may or may not give. What will the worshiper do? Stop worshiping. If my purpose of going to a shop is not to have a relationship with the storekeeper, generally speaking, my purpose in going to a shop is to purchase something. If they don't have what I want, will I keep going to the shop? Suppose they have what I want. As soon as I get it, what will I do? Leave. Srimati Radharani, of course, accuses Krishna of being like this when she's talking to the bee, when Uddhava's there. She's saying, just like a person goes to the home of a host, and as soon as they eat, they leave. We have this problem at our centers, don't we? People may come just for prasadam, and as soon as prasadam's over, they go. Generally, we don't have a part of the program after prasadam. We always try to put prasadam last. So hopefully people will stay. Although one time when I was doing a program in Mumbai, it started so late, it started like 8 o'clock at night. And I said, could we don't take prasadam first? But anyway, Radharani accuses Krishna like that. She said, as soon as you get what you want, then you go. So that's business. That's a business deal with Krishna. I worship Krishna, I worship Krishna, I worship Krishna. He doesn't give me what I want, I stop worshiping him. Or I worship Krishna, I worship Krishna. He gives me what I want, I take what I want, and I don't go back to him again until I want something else. And when I have the thing, I forget about him, I just have the thing. Oh, wow, now I got my new car. And we also see this happen with devotees if they're thinking about pure devotional service in terms of bhakti or mukti. If they think about Krishna consciousness in terms of, I'll worship Krishna and then I will get some sort of ecstasy, or I'll worship Krishna and then I'll be free from all suffering. If they worship Krishna, it doesn't happen right away the way they want, they're gone. Or they get a little bit, they say, okay, that's enough, fine, I'm just going to sit now and enjoy this, and I'll come back to you when I want some more. So that's the mood of the Sakama devotees. And to achieve bhakti yoga with that mood is not going to happen. At least not for a very, 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 very long time. Whereas those who are aspiring for pure devotional service, they are honest with the Lord, but what is their mood? Please help me to overcome my material desires. Lord, I'm not necessarily asking you to fulfill these. I'm just asking you to make it so I don't want them anymore. And in fact, I know that the fulfillment of the desire may actually just inflame me with more and more and more desires. We see this happen all the time. You know, you get some money and immediately you want more money. You become, as Sri Prahlad explains in his happiness seminars, you adapt. So you get something, and at first it seems wonderful, and then you get used to it, so then you want more. And you get used to that, and then you want more, or you want different, or you want better. You get the perfect computer, and then you find it isn't quite perfect, and then you want a different one, and and then you get that, and then you want a different one, and then you want... So if we really want those desires satisfied, that's another kind of prayer. Krishna, I'd like it so this was calm and quiet, so there wasn't this churning. And the devotees are also going with what kind of mood? You're right. I'm your servant. The devotees go to the Lord with their desires in the same way that a properly trained and cultured child goes to parents, or a properly trained and cultured wife goes to the husband. There's this very popular book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. You've heard of that book? So he says there, how should a woman ask her husband for something? He said, first of all, she should just make a simple request. She shouldn't hint. She shouldn't, imply. She shouldn't think he's going to read her mind. She just asks. I'd really like that, Musari. And he also says that if the husband says no, she says, okay. And that's all. So that's the mood of the devotee. Marobi rakobi yoichetamad. Samhare vipari. That's the role of prakriti. We're all prakriti. We're not Purusha. And that's actually the truth anyway. If Krishna doesn't want to give you something, you're not going to get it anyway. Whether you stamp your feet and yell and scream doesn't really make any difference. As we've all discovered, I'm sure. Krishna, please! You can give it or not give it. I'd like you all to think for a minute of the times when you wanted something and Krishna gave you. Often very fast, and it was also often very sweet. Have you noticed that those were often the things you were sort of detached about? That you weren't yelling and screaming about? I'm sure you've all had this sort of circumstance, I remember walking past the pujari room. This was in 73. And just seeing the plate of Maha sweets and thinking, I'd like one of those. And 2 seconds later, somebody put one in my hand. You've had this sort of experience? Okay. You notice it doesn't happen usually for the things that we're ranting and raving about? You ever wonder about that? How come the little things that I don't really care so much about, somehow they just show up? One day you think, I'd like to have some cashews, and there on the door of your unit is hanging a bag of cashews. And the things you're saying, please, Krishna, please, can you please? Yeah, like that. That he doesn't necessarily do. Because that kind of thing is a demand. Nobody likes to deal with someone who's demanding. Any of you like that? Someone's demanding? I was just doing some counseling with a Grahastha couple, and the husband said, well, it was time to go to the temple, and I wasn't ready yet, and my wife wanted me to go, and she said, will you change the baby's diaper? I said, no, I don't want to. She said, well, if you don't change the baby's diaper, I'm just going to leave her here with you while I go to the temple without you. I said, what did you do? He said, I just took the baby and strapped her into the car seat, so my wife had to take her. Okay. I said, how did you feel when your wife said that to you? If you don't change the baby's diaper, I'm going to leave her here with you and go without you. So it took him a while, and then he said, I felt kind of scared. I said, what were you scared of? He said, well, I was scared that if I did what she asked, I'd give up my freedom. And if I didn't do what she asked, I might lose my relationship. And I didn't know what to do. Because I want a relationship with my wife, but I want my freedom also. And Krishna, being the ultimate Swarat, he doesn't like demands. And Prabhupada often says that the devotee holds Krishna in the palm of his hand. But that's because he doesn't demand. Do you know what the definition of a demand is? You won't say, okay, when you get a no. So the devotees give their material desire, they offer it, they put them at Krishna's lotus feet and say, my dear Lord, you can do with them as you like. You can fulfill them in an external way. You cannot fulfill them in an external way. Really, what I'd like you to do is take out this block that's between me and you. These material desires are blocking our relationship. And therefore, I will put them out. These are the things that are blocking our relationship. Lord, please help me to deal with them. And you deal with them however you see fit. So the essence of a material desire is given here as gatram. Now, gatram means the body, but it literally means the body surface, the skin. And this is probably why Srila Prabhupada talks about in this purport that materialistic people want to keep they're eager to keep their body comfortable. And you notice here again this difference between the materialist and the devotee is this eagerness. He says a pure devotee may also be comfortable. In other words, a pure devotee may be in a situation where externally material desires are being fulfilled in material ways, where it appears like that. They may have a lot of money, they may have good health, they may be beautiful, they may have a lot of friends, they may have a lot of influence. Like Pujarik Virginity, Sudama Brahmana, there's so many examples. The Pandavas at certain points in their life anyway. But they're not eager for it. Again, when one's eager for it, then one starts making demands. And then one has this business relationship. So a material desire means I'm eager for something, I'm attached to something, and I'm attached especially to bodily comfort. Now, if I'm attached to bodily comfort, what that means is I'm looking for a certain kind of yoga. I'm looking for yoga between my senses and the sense objects. Correct? I want there to be a union between my ear and pleasant sounds. I want there to be a union between my nose and nice smells, my tongue and nice taste, my skin and something soft. Right? And I'm thinking then that who is me? The body and the mind. Material desire can also mean I want to do something stimulating and exciting mentally. Like when I was a teenager, I used to like to solve logical puzzles. That was my big sense gratification. And it's interesting that a materialistic person will be interested in vidya, vrata, and tapaha for the sake of this yoga between the senses and the sense objects, right? Will materialistic people gain knowledge so they can have better joining of the senses and the sense objects? Certainly. Will they take vows? I'm going to go to school, and I'm going to finish school, I'm going to get my education, I'm going to get my degree, I'm going to join the military. They sign contracts, right, with an employer, with a spouse. Tapaha, do they take on voluntary miseries? In fact, it's impossible to not take on misery, so it's either voluntary or involuntary. But do they take on voluntary miseries in order to get a higher standard of this joining of the senses and the sense objects? Definitely. So they're doing vidya, vrata, and tapaha in order to get gatram, in order to get the body connected with the sources of pleasure for the body, thinking the body is the self. And they're very enthusiastic, they're very eager for that. And if they can't get it, they become disappointed or angry. All right, now a devotee. We find here a devotee is not eager for bodily comforts. Does that mean a devotee is just sort of blasé? Okay, whatever happens. It just happens, you know. Does a devotee have eagerness? Does a devotee, pure devotee, have eagerness? Does a devotee have something that they demand, something they don't want to take a no for? And does that also involve some sort of yoga? Does it involve full satisfaction for the self? What does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? Relish and rejoice in the self. So what's the difference between sense gratification and the view of the devotee? They want to serve Krishna with their senses, but what's also the basic difference? It's how they're defining their self. If I define myself as this body, then I'm going to do knowledge and vows and tapasya in order to have union of this body with the things that will give this body pleasure, very temporarily, we should say. And if I think on the self, then I'm going to do knowledge and vows and austerities in order to have yoga of myself with its proper object. Narada, I believe it is, in giving an analogy, he says, Danurhitasya pranava vatanti sharam ujivam parameva laksham. Danur means the bow. Pranava is mantra, especially omkar, but also Hare Krishna mantra. The bow is the mantra. Sharam ujivam. We, the self, is the arrow. Parameva laksham. Laksha is the target. The purpose of our vows and austerities and knowledge, our chanting of the mantra especially, is to shoot us toward the target. So the devotees are also eager. The devotees also want to join themselves with the source of pleasure. It's just they're correctly identifying who they are, and they're correctly identifying the source of their happiness. Slight difference. What's our real position of comfort? Is our real position of comfort to have, you know, a nice wood stove and silk clothes and enough money? Or is our real position of comfort to be at Krishna's lotus feet? And if you have the real comfort, then you don't care so much about the other. It's not relevant. It just doesn't matter anymore. Because it has nothing to do with the self. All right, so back to our original question. So now we know what devotees should do with devotees who are aspiring for pure devotional service should do with their material desires, what material desires are, and what the actual form of satisfaction is for the devotees. Now, how did the Lord both externally fulfill the desires of the demigods and yet not be foolish? Because remember he was saying he wasn't going to be a fool to give them something harmful? What was Krishna's method here of purifying them of these material desires? Who is he telling them to go to? Didich? What's he giving them? Sadhusanga? He's giving them sadhusanga. He says, why don't you go to this person who is so detached from bodily comfort that he'll give you his body? Anybody here ready to give their body like that? Like Karna, you know, Karna was born with natural armor and earrings. You all know about Karna? When Kunti was a young girl, she served Durvasa Muni, and he was very pleased with her. He said, what would you like? She said, I don't really know what I need. You can see the future. Why don't you give me what I need? He said, I'll give you a mantra that you can call any of the demigods. And she was probably about 12, 13 years old. And when he left, she thought, I wonder how this works. So she thought, maybe I'll call the sun god. So she calls the sun god, and the sun god comes and said, this is a progeny mantra you chanted. This is a mantra for me to give you a child. She said, oh, I didn't know that. That wasn't what I wanted. I'm not married, you know, and I'm not married to you, and I don't think this is a very good idea. Okay, I called you, I said the mantra, please go away. He said, I can't. He said, I'm obligated by the mantra. She's like, okay. He says, don't worry, we'll adjust everything so that you'll be restored to your maiden state. All right, then she has this baby, who's the child of the sun god. He's brilliantly effulgent, and he's born with natural armor and earrings. And the sun god had arranged that because he knew the child was going to be a danger later. And Kunti was so upset and frightened by the birth of this child that she just put him in a basket in the river. So later on, this child Karna became an enemy of the Pandavas. He didn't know the Pandavas were actually his brothers. And he had taken a vow to kill Arjuna, but as long as he had this natural armor and earrings, nobody could kill him. And the battle of Kurukshetra was going to begin. So Indra, who's the biological father of Arjuna, he came to Karna at the time that Karna gave charity. And he said, I want your armor and earrings. I want your kavach and kundala. And Karna said, but it's part of my body. You know, imagine if you had a sign, moving sale, giving everything away, right? And someone knocks on your door. Yes, I'd like something. What would you like? Can I have one of your fingers, please? You said giving everything away. So Karna said, all right, I said I would give whatever anyone asked in charity. And he actually cut the armor and earrings off of his body. Or Maharaj Shivi, when the pigeon took shelter of him, the pigeon came and said, the hawk is chasing me, the hawk is chasing me. And then the hawk came and said, hey, king, give me my food. And the king said, but I promised the pigeon protection. He said, I'm also your citizen, you also have to protect me. What about my food? And the king said, all right, I'll give you portions of my body equal to the weight of the pigeon. And of course, the pigeon and the hawk were the devas testing him. But the point is that there's, you know, that's very unusual that somebody's willing to sacrifice their own body. If any of us were told, you know, hey, there's some big demon attacking the temple, and, you know, Radhagiri Hari just came to us and said, we have to make a weapon out of your bones, would you please give up your body? Most of us would say, forget that. I give up my body, let the demon attack the temple, I'm out of here. Yes?
The Muslim terrorists are prepared to give their bodies in sacrifice.
Yes, some of the Muslim terrorists are prepared to do it. That's fine. Just see. Of course, we wonder what God they're sacrificing to. Wanting to give your body in sacrifice is very wonderful, but not by killing innocent people. That's not the way to give your body in sacrifice. Anyway, that is the view of the devotees, that they're so detached, they're willing to give their body in sacrifice. Of course, we're all meant to do that. All of us have taken initiation. We've given our body to our spiritual master and to Krishna. Now you do Manasadeya Deva. You can do with it whatever you like. Marobi, Rakubi. So Lord Vishnu wanted Indra to associate with a person like Dadichi, to see that Dadichi had done his knowledge and his vows and his sacrifice for a different kind of comfort and happiness. And who else did Lord Vishnu, we'll find in the last verse of this chapter, that Lord Vishnu is also going to tell them that Vitrasura is a devotee. So he's giving Indra the opportunity to associate with Dadichi and with Vitrasura. And on the battlefield, Vitrasura will preach to Indra. And he'll say, you know, why are you so concerned with being victor over the three worlds? Why don't you just want to please Lord Vishnu? I personally don't care. I'm happy to die. Doesn't matter to me. I'm happy to be defeated by you. So this is ultimately our cure is the association of devotees. As Sukadeva Goswami says in what Jiva Goswami explains, is in one sense the final verse of the Bhagavatam, although it's only in the second canto. Pevantiye Bhagavata Atmana Sukham Ketamrita Shravana Pute Shusamritam Pumantite Nantite Vishaya Vidushita Swayam Rajanta Tachcharna Sarovamandikam. Atmana Sukham, one who's dear to the devotees. If you drink the talks of Krishna, who is dear to the devotees, they fill up this katamritam, this nectar of katha, fills up the ears. And punanti te vishaya vidushrita, it destroys this desire for sense gratification, just like if you eat the feast we had last night, you wouldn't be interested in old bread. Someone gives you a feast plate with, you know, pasta balls and samosas and deep-fried paneer and cake, and on the other hand, they give you a plate of five-day-old bread. So when one associates with the devotees, one sees, oh, there's a higher taste. There's the real self. There's real comfort. There's real happiness. There's real pleasure, which I can only achieve if I remove these blocks between me and the Lord, which is this desire for pleasure on the platform of the false self. So we should be assured that if we're honest with the Lord, He will take care of us in a wonderful way. When we say that Krishna fulfills the desires of the devotees in a way that purifies them, that's a very loving thing. It's a very wonderful and clever thing. It's not a cruel thing. Even when Krishna apparently does something that appears to be cruel to his devotees, the goal is loving. You know, Priyavrata, the son of Swayambhu Manu, who was able to make a second son. After he gave up his renunciation to rule the universe, he married two wives. One of them was Bahirshmati. And it said that in his loving relationship with Bahirshmati, their love increased day by day. A similar thing is said about the love between Usha and Aniruddha. It said that their love increased by four times every day. Does that sound like a nice marriage? Would everyone like to have a marriage like that? Would you like to have a friendship like that? Where the love and the relationship kept increasing every day? Isn't that what everybody's aiming for? Generally in this world, that doesn't happen. Generally, it decreases. When people first marry, they're like, oh, you know, and after a while, it's just change the diaper or I'm going to leave the baby with you. Or even just the intensity decreases. Right? The intensity you feel for a child like Devaki Nandan, who's only two, it is not the same intensity you feel for them when they're 22. So Krishna wants to reestablish the relationship he has with us, where our love with him is always increasing. That's the kind of relationship Krishna has with all of the jivas, like it's explained. Of course, it's Radharani, but it's true for everything. That is, Radharani and Krishna look at each other. Their love increases. As their love increases, their beauty increases. As their beauty increases, their love increases. So we find the description that when Krishna apparently acts cruelly with the devotees, like when Krishna leaves Vrindavan and doesn't go back for a long time, what's the reason given? That Krishna's done that for the reason of? Increasing the love of the devotees. So if that's the purpose, if that's the goal, if that's the result, then is there anything cruel? If Krishna apparently taking away something, what's he taking away? If you go to Krishna and you say, I want lots of money, and if he decides to purify that desire by taking away the money you already have, why is he doing that? to increase the loving relationship. He's taking away something that's a block. Like some of these people who play video games, you know? About a year ago, I visited one of my former students and his family. And when I came in, I didn't see the wife at all. She wasn't even dressed yet. It was maybe 11 in the morning. She kind of pops out of the room and says, "All right, Norman, I'll be with you in a little bit." She never talked to us the whole time. And as I was leaving, she comes out. She said, "I'm really sorry I didn't talk to you, but my brother was playing a computer game with me, and we had to get this something or whatever." So that's a block to the relationship, isn't it? Hey, your friends are there, your family are there, and you're absorbed in the game, or a person who's an alcoholic. So if an alcoholic says to his wife, "I want more liquor," she might take all the bottles away that he already has. But that's simply to increase the love. So however Krishna does it, whether he externally fulfills your desire so that you say, "Okay, I did it. And you know, it really wasn't anything special. I did it, I got it, and big deal. Finished with it. Now I don't need it anymore." Or if he fulfills your desires, or he takes your desires and takes away what you already have, and then you go, "Oh, I really wanted you." Or here he's fulfilling your desires by saying, "Why don't you go to a devotee and ask them for that?" However he does it, his purpose is so that the loving relationship with him increases. Therefore, we give our material desire, all of our material desires, our spiritual desires, our desires for liberation, whatever they are, we give them to Krishna with that trust. And if things don't work out externally the way we want, we think, "How can I use this to increase my loving relationship with Krishna?" So thank you. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions, adjustments? Okay, thank you very much. Otherwise, you should go.